Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's a Monday morning, 14 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today. And the first portion of our program is the Roundtable panel. And what a panel we have. WAMC's Alan Chartok, fresh back from down south, is here. Good morning, sir.
Big Easy. Terrific.
You had a good time?
Oh, God. The whole family went, and all the cousins got to know each other, and little three-year-olds
nice.
Doing their thing. It was wonderful.
You know, we had some rotten weather up here while you were gone.
So I heard.
Yeah, so lucky you. You were far away.
The first day we got there, it was 85.
Really? Well, that's nice. Yeah, we were shoveling and such.
Yeah. And you had all the kids together.
Yeah, we brought everybody down.
Oh, lovely.
That's what grandparents do, you know.
And that voice you just heard was communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. How's everyone today on this lovely day?
I don't know. It's Monday. We'll get through
it. Oh, don't act like Alan. What? Be your cheery self.
I have an actual shirt that says don't act like Alan. Also with us is Albany County District Attorney David Soares. Good morning, sir.
I'd like to pronounce my last name like Teresa pronounces her, so I want Swaraj.
You know what? You ask for it, you'll get it. Remember that.
It's going to be a long morning.
Well, I don't know if anybody was up till the bitter end, but as Jimmy Kimmel put it, this will go down as this year, the year men had messed things up so much, the Best Picture Oscar went to a movie about a woman dating a fish. The Shape of Water captured the night's big prize at the 90th Academy Awards last night. The first Oscar ceremony held after the Harvey Weinstein scandal rocked Hollywood and the rest of the world. The Weinstein was nowhere to be found. The ousted movie mogul's presence was felt in and around the Dolby Theater. A number of those on stage referred to the Me Too movement, including Kimmel, who hosted for the second straight year. Shape of Water was the biggest winner. It had 13 nominations. It won 4 last night. Frances McDormand's portrayal of a mother seeking justice for her murdered daughter in 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri won the Best Actress Academy Award. It was her second Oscar. Gary Oldman, as Winston Churchill in The Darkest Hour, won for Best Actor. Guillermo del Toro won the Best Director Academy Award for his film, The Shape of Water. Of the 4 of us in this room, how many stayed up to watch the show?
I watched the show, but not a single movie that was celebrated in the show.
I saw all of them.
Did you really? All the movies?
All of the movies, but none of the show.
Yeah, no, right. And I'm going to tell you, you know, when you're married to Roselle.
Which only you will, yeah, presumably are.
If you were, but you're not. and I.
But you are.
She's a movie person, boy.
Really? She loves,
you know,
movies.
There has to be. We have a movie theater in Great Barrington, which my friend Richard Stanley built, called the Triplex. And it's actually 4 films. I call it the Triple X myself.
And I'm not surprised.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different other thing.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. But I got dragged to actually all of those movies you just mentioned.
Really?
Every one of them.
What was your favorite?
I think
favorite?
What you meant to say, I went on lovely dates to all of those movies.
That's
Is
what
that
I
what
meant
you meant to say?
You're so right, Teresa. You can really get inside my mind and say what I should have said.
Which film was your favorite?
I like The Shape of Water.
Yeah.
I thought that was terrific. And I liked the fish. I could relate to him. And, you know, and it was a good film. I'm not an artsy craftsy guy.
I noticed.
So,
you're a banjo player more.
More. So I thought The Shape of Water was great. And I loved the Winston Churchill film. I thought it was magnificent. I liked the guy's portrayal. He had a fatten up. He looked a little like.
And David Swaraj, what did you think about the whole thing last night?
Well, truth be told, ever since Pulp Fiction lost to Forrest Gump, I've boycotted the Oscars. How do you give that award to that movie when you had Jules Winfield? You know,
I agree with you.
You had Vinny Vega, my man in Amsterdam. You had the best lines in the history of movies from that film, and this is what they did. So I can't.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Well. First of all, Forrest Gump is my number one film.
What year are we talking about here, kids?
86, maybe? 87?
No, this was in the 90s.
Was it?
This was definitely, yeah, I've been gone from it for a while.
I loved that film, and I was sitting around with a bunch of literati. We got invited to dinner, and they went around the table, and everybody said what their favorite film was, you know. And these were all distinguished scholars of film.
Yes, you got Bergman and
each of them. That's right. We're going to say the Red Shoes, the this, the that, and they came to me and I said Forrest Gump. Now everybody looked down at their plates, you know, because
I would have said Mary Poppins.
At least you didn't say Ernest Goes to Jail. You know?
Yeah.
But now, Teresa, you had wanted to discuss Frances McDormand and her speech.
Right. Well, the so she has gotten everybody Googling and trying to find out what an inclusion rider is, which I thought was a very good thing for her to do, which is you can add to your contract a provision that says that you will be in the movie as long as the cast and the crew are inclusive, diverse. And she noted that she's been in the business 35 years. She did this after the show, that she'd been in the business 35 years and had no idea what an inclusion rider was. I think we need more of those. I remember years ago when I was talking about how to make panels more diverse. This is when I was at Harvard. He said just every man on a panel says, well, okay, I won't be on the panel unless there's some women on the panel. That's how you make it more diverse. And this is basically the same idea, but you can put it in your contract.
But, you know, one of the things I love about the Academy is that, and the Oscars, although I don't watch them, is that, you know, the thing has gotten pretty political.
Very political.
And I think it's representative of the best instincts of the country. Really? I mean, you know, how can you argue? And by the way, when the Academy turns the other way, they get beaten up quite correctly. So we saw a couple of years ago now when there were very few African-American actors. And I think the Academy has tried very hard to make sure that that isn't going to happen again. Now, what you don't want is people being nominated because they're African American. You want them, but you do want them to get what's due them. And I think that that's where this, and so when you see, you know, the matter of sexism and that kind of thing, I think it's wonderful.
Right. And it really was addressed in so many different ways. Common did a great job. And it was an interesting show. I spent the day or the afternoon at a play rather than the theater.
Where did you go?
The Goho's Music Hall.
What'd you see?
I saw the 25th annual Putnam Spelling Bee. And you, Alan, tell me that that was written
I believe it came right out of Julie Boyd's, Barrington Stage. I think that's
fantastic. I'm more of a live theater than a movie person myself.
I think I'm right about that. But suppose I'm wrong, and then we'll get all these telephone
Somebody
calls.
Will know.
Actually, no one will email because I didn't mention about the emails.
I bet somebody will email about the Oscars.
The email address is panel@wamc.org if you want to weigh in and tell Alan he's wrong. Keep your letters short, to the point, and on topic. Don't include links. Don't use abbreviations if you can. Proofread. And don't send one more email. No, don't send more than one email per day. Oh, what a slip.
Right.
Panel@wamc.org. And David, you wanted to say something.
Well, the whole commentary, the comments about the Oscars being so politicized, I think there's a rich history of the Oscars and shows like the Oscars being that stage being leveraged to deliver a message. And I think my favorite actor, Marlon Brando, was among the first to actually do that when in an effort to communicate to the world the plight of Native Americans, he had sent someone to retrieve his Oscar for him.
Right.
And so that was, I think, to me, one of the greatest, you know, examples of leveraging that opportunity to deliver a political message.
And movies do affect culture. They can change the culture and affect the culture and represent the culture. And I thought it was an interesting... Kobe Bryant won Oscar, and he got
for
up...
What?
For an animation film.
It was
about
a documentary
about
his experience in basketball.
And he got up and talked about, I know we basketball players are just supposed to shut up and dribble, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
So, which I thought was wonderful. But, I thought it was interesting. I thought Jimmy Kimmel's tux was really nice. I really liked his tux.
Did you think he was good?
I thought it was pretty, It's a tough job. I thought he was fine.
Well, he was, but do you ever think that, you know, he's a he, that maybe that should have been a she in this particular year?
Yeah, well, that would be a big breakthrough, wouldn't it?
Well,
that would be a big thing.
What's funny to me, I shouldn't use the word funny, is that, you know, here we are. It's like 2018, and we're still celebrating firsts,
right?
In the realm of theater and art, which is absurd, right? I mean, one of my favorite artists from Key and Peele, who had won for, I believe it was a script for Get Out.
Right.
So he's the first African American, you know.
I was stunned
writer.
That it's first one.
It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's 2018. And so it just goes to show that there is so much room for improvement, whether you're talking about the wages that are earned by actresses in comparison to their male counterparts.
Stunningly different.
It's stunningly different. And so
we've got a long way to go.
A long way to go. And what's interesting is that I think the collective representation in that room, they're the industry.
Right.
And so they have it within their ability to change it, right? Which is perhaps the better message to continue delivering as opposed to who wore what, you know.
And we can all vote with our wallet.
Yes, we can.
And I was thinking, Alan, about the White House White House Correspondents' Dinner, you know, because of obviously the media has had, you know, equally cataclysmic issues around how the Me Too movement in the media industry with Fox News and ABC and so on and so forth. So can you imagine at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which is sort of the equivalent, if there is one, them shining such a light on the problems with it in their own industry? I doubt that'll happen, but
it'll be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's sort of the equivalent public display.
Now, is
the
president going to that one? I think he went to the gridiron.
He
but
did
I,
go to the gridiron.
I think
on Saturday
he said
night.
He's not going to the White House Correspondents' Dinner because that one's so much. That's public. The gridiron is not.
And he got shamed.
At the gridiron?
No, when Obama let him have it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
that was.
Right.
That was brilliant, actually. I wish they would play that over and over again.
Well, I think somebody is.
I think we're living the results of that.
I would like to see what the ratings were for last night's Academy Awards. They dipped a bit last year, and I'm wondering as far as the politicization.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Whether it alienates X number of viewers.
The 30%.
Yeah.
Whether the 30%, that could take it down a bit. You know what I mean?
Well, I think, look. Pulp Fiction aside, the politicalization of shows like that sort of alienate people like myself as well. I mean, if you were listening on Friday and Thursday, right? I mean, last week, things that were coming out of the White House was just too much. I raised a white flag. I raised a white flag at Kushner. I was like, okay, I can't take this anymore. And then we have Hope Hicks, you know, resigning. It was just too much. I didn't even have time to read about Bob Mueller and his expanding investigation into
the $30,000 table or the...
Yes, it was so much on Friday. So Saturday was a great day off. And I just couldn't... If I'm going to be entertained, if I'm going to watch something and I want to be entertained, I just can't have politics in that.
Have we reached saturation point in this society with news and endless look shows like the Roundtable Panel where it's just... You're constantly hammering political issues?
Well, Raymond, don't you think that that's a possibility, that that's what he's up, but that's what Trump has been up to all along? The oversaturation so that nothing means anything after all? I mean, here's a guy, we're talking about actors who once said some who've done terrible things and some who did not, you know, wasn't at the end of the world. And here's this president who has, you know, just violated every norm when it comes to the treatment of women that you could possibly think of.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I don't know that there's so much exhaustion as so much as I think people want, for example, football. I'd like to watch my game on Sunday without all the extra. I just want to watch.
I'm with you there.
Right?
But there were lots of jokes. There was a whole jet ski bit. They went into a theater filled with viewers.
And what was that all about?
Well, they wanted to thank people who go to the movies and pay for all the tickets. And so they went into a theater.
I thought it was
theater.
Dumb. I thought it was something out of David Letterman, to be honest with you.
Well, when they took... You must have seen a hot dog gun before. I'd never seen such a thing.
A hot dog gun. Oh. I must confess, I have not seen such a
thing.
Is it a Russian?
They had this thing that was
shooting hot dogs into
the audience.
Yeah. Hypersonic hot dog gun, Vladimir Putin.
Because when you go to Fenway, you just don't want 19 people touching your dog before you get
you
it.
Got,
you know what I mean?
You don't want to go to Fenway. I think that's such a
by the way,
you want to be
don't
shot
eat
at.
Hot dogs.
And by the way, David, I have to correct you because the Berkshires are the place where you know, the friendly was always very, you know, friendly takes a the.
The friendlies?
Yeah, the friendly. I'm going over, I'm taking my kids over to the friendly.
Right.
I'm ignoring the fact that Ray just said you wouldn't want to go to Fenway. Thanks, Ray. I'll use your ticket.
Right.
You can stay home.
Ray, you go to Citi Field. You can bring about $600. You can go to Citi Field and park. Hey, we got to take a break here.
And then what are we going to talk about?
Well, maybe we'll get some letters if people actually heard me give the address, which is panel@wamc.org. David Soares is here, Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Shartok, and you. And we'll get to some of your letters and more topics coming up on the Roundtable. Ah, yes, lovely music. That's the Art Pepper Quintet here on the Roundtable, 9:34.
Lovely music.
Lovely,
like it.
Lovely.
It's one of my favorite shows on WMHG television.
What was that?
The Lawrence Welk Show.
Oh, great. Great stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think Art Pepper would have ever been on Lawrence Welk.
Well, when you said lovely music, that was imitating.
Thank you, boys. Very wonderful.
The Lawrence Welk Show is responsible for a lot of pain that I suffered at the hands of my siblings. Back in the day when you watched television as a family.
Yeah.
And the youngest one has to go turn the dial to change
the
channel.
You're the clicker.
And then I hit the Lawrence Welk channel, and my dad sees it and wants to stay there. My siblings look at me like, what did you do?
I'm with you, man. We're obviously of the same generation.
Well, I love that show, and I still love that show. It's so grotesque. It's so wonderful.
It's not grotesque.
Oh, no.
Grotesque.
It's a slice
it's
of Americana.
Is that the wrong word? But I love it. I can't pull my eyes away from it.
It's not grotesque.
What is it?
It's lovely.
Lovely music.
It's melodic.
And so we come back to
the letters.
Lovely music
it's
here.
It's melodic.
9:35.
There must be melodicas.
It's the panel. Teresa Bourgeois in rare form today. Also Alan Shartok and Albany County District Attorney David Soares. You can join the conversation by emailing us, panel@wamc.org. We're a bit bereft of letters, thanks to me not mentioning the email address until the very end of the first half hour, but we have a couple.
We have a couple indeed. I think there are probably some more.
Right.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The Oscars and entertainment in general will become truly diverse when women larger than size 2 can succeed in the business. It's the last taboo. Black, red, white, LGBT, Asian, Hispanic, all great. But this is not my letter. This is Judy's letter. But fat in quotes, question mark, forget about it.
That's true. That's so true.
Well, there are some people a little bit more heft, aren't there? I mean, wasn't Ethel Merman a good example of that?
Well, you know, it
careful, district attorney. Don't go. Just be careful.
Let's just read the next one.
No, just because, you know, you do have, you want, you know, Hollywood should reflect,
everything.
the people of our society and this idea that, you know, everyone's a size 1-0. It just sends a poor message to especially young people. But it's just really not accurate of who we are seeing.
How can there be a size 0, by the way?
There is a size 0.
Yeah, there is a size.
Two-dimensional?
Most models are size 0. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You're a stick figure.
Thank goodness we don't do that here with our, our
required
announcing staff.
I've protested the size 0, which is why I'm...
I think Alan's a size 0. But one of the... Okay, this is...
We're not talking about IQ here. Just cut it out.
This really just really stretches the limits of my knowledge of the movies. But The Greatest Showman, one of the top songs that was nominated was This Is Me. And that's really part of the theme of This Is Me, that we all have to be proud of whoever we are, whatever we look like. And there we go.
Okay. Well, thank you for that letter. And to be clear, Alan, that was not Alan. That was the letter saying that.
Yeah, that's true.
But size 0 is just not healthy.
Janet says, hosting the Oscars. Hi, panel.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Just to remind you all that Whoopi Goldberg and Ellen DeGeneres have hosted the Oscars. You're absolutely right, Janet. Yeah. I hang my head in shame.
And this is, I think, because we're not Oscar people, we would have known
that.
All I'm saying is, had Pulp Fiction won, I would have known that. I would have jumped on that before
Wasn't
we said that.
Wasn't that just a violent movie?
It was the best movie.
Yes or no, violent movie.
As a matter of fact, my latest stay at the hospital when I check in as a character. From the movie.
Yeah, well, it's
don't
probably
tell
not
us
a good idea.
I won't say
it's
who it is.
Probably
but
the cover
not a will
good
be blown.
Idea. I think you just blew your cover.
Emery O says, whatever Hollywood, quote, likes is usually going along with the popular sentiment at the time. Remember, they are in business to sell us images. Rarely do they take the lead on anything. They could have self-regulated. Harvey Weinstein, best regards from Emory.
Thank you, Emory, for that.
Yeah. Okay.
There's some truth to that too, but I think I think you have to always applaud the leadership, some of the leadership in Hollywood that take risks on funding certain movies. You know, we're seeing evidence right now with the Black Panther in theaters, an African superhero that is just destroying the box office. You know, proving that the old myths about, you know, African Americans and leads and especially superheroes just don't work. We're seeing
making enormous amount of money, and in conjunction with that, Ever the Nerd, they have a wonderful voter registration effort with that movie,
exactly.
Which I am so excited about.
Has anybody
about
seen that.
That
one yet?
Which
yes.
one?
My kids have, and
I
haven't yet.
I saw it. It's great.
I love the Marvel, that whole
fabulous.
Story arc, and apparently that's one of the great ones.
It was fabulous.
But I think Marvel is communicating that now, you know, with respect to they're putting out a woman as a lead character because the myth had always been women as lead characters in action films don't sell.
Right.
Wonder Woman kind of
that was DC, but
that, right?
They actually watched that on pay-per-view in my house last night or on demand. Apparently got good thumbs up. I was dozing, but it got thumbs up.
I am so old that I remember Captain Marvel, from which I think Marvel comics come from. No.
There's been a
Ray
few of them.
Ray is saying, no, that's not so.
There's been a few of
but
them.
Captain Marvel, and then there was some kind of a deal with Superman and Captain Marvel, and one said one was a ripoff of the other, so Superman survived. I think Captain Marvel, who was known for saying, Shazam.
Yeah. Jim Neighbors and Captain Marvel.
I liked him.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel. Anyway, here's a letter from Ryan, who takes a different view than many people around this table might have. Ryan says, gender versus sales. It has to be added that historically, films with a male leading role make more money in a theater. It is not solely a matter of male versus female or black versus white. If films with white male leads make these studios the most money, they should be compensated accordingly. And if a leading lady takes to the silver screen and is filling seats, then she should be compensated the same. And that's Ryan from Pittsfield.
Okay, he's taking the market approach.
I think we'll agree to disagree on the facts of that letter, but thank you for writing.
Well, the only thing I would say to Ryan is, you know, when you have... you could say white male lead actors who, you know, the studios invest a ton of money in. If those films bomb, they're getting another chance at it the very next month.
And still getting paid a lot of money,
where you just don't see that with anyone else. If there's a strong, you know, if there's an African-American lead and that movie bombs, that person isn't getting another shot at it for probably another 2 or 3 years, right?
Depending on age, too. And age is another
age
issue.
Age is a big discriminating factor.
Oh, yes, it is. Roshni writes, sorry we can't entertain. Dear panel, I understand oversaturation, but the time is over for people of color and women to just sit quietly and accept things as they are. Sorry we are ruining your football and Oscars experiences, but the time we are going to sit down and shut up is definitely over. Sorry, but deal with it.
I don't think it's ruining the. I think it's part of the important part of the national conversation. But
I don't fully get that one. But maybe I'm a little slow because I had 3 hours sleep last night.
Email address here is panel@wamc.org. President Trump is embracing the potential for a trade war after announcing his intention to place tariffs on imported steel and aluminum as he rebuffs allies who have pushed to be exempted from the stiff duties. The policy will be made official in the next 2 weeks, White House officials said Sunday as the administration defended the decision from critics in Washington and overseas. Now, the announcement on Thursday that the U.S. would impose tariffs of 25% and 10% respectively on imported steel and aluminum roiled markets, rankled allies, and now this is ostensibly aimed at China, but those duties will also cover significant imports from Canada, Mexico, South Korea, Japan, and the European Union. Donald Trump today said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that Canada and Mexico, we're going to have to deal with the tariffs unless these NAFTA talks get underway again and they reorganize NAFTA.
Well, Donald Trump is getting his getting it from his contemporaries in the White House, and Mr. Cohen, his economic advisor, and everybody else. So that is something that, and the markets have reacted quite adversely to this idea. Canada has already said, "Hey, we're coming after you." So I think that's why he was responding to Canada. It's part of what I would only call the philosophy of bullyism. You know, you got to use it.
Anybody?
I think this is, it wasn't surprising because he talked all during the campaign about doing this, just like he denigrated NAFTA and he denigrated the various treaties. And so let's step back and say, what's the implications of this? Well, it hurts a number of our key allies. And it also begins to isolate, just like in the TPP, the other countries, you know, the U.S. is not at the table, so the other countries are going ahead without the U.S. And now with NAFTA, I see this morning he's tweeted repeatedly about NAFTA. And so what will be the long-term implications of the chaos that he's creating in the markets and amongst our allies? I think it will further strengthen China, perhaps weaken the U.S., and realign our, you know, our partnerships. And
Teresa,
trade.
Don't you think that the context here is also what's going on with Mueller? I mean, in other words, this is the kind of, you know, bomb you throw into the mix because things are getting a little hot on the domestic front.
I agree with you that this is a bomb that's being thrown into the mix. However, I'd like to draw your attention to something that I don't think a lot of people are thinking about, and that is the congressional race that's taking place right now in the 18th Congressional District, which runs from the suburbs south and the east of Pittsburgh to the West Virginia border, right? There is a first-time candidate. He's a former prosecutor, gentleman by the name of Connor Lab. He's 33. He's a former Marine and a prosecutor. He's running in what should easily be a Trump safe seat
he
in
won
the House.
By at least 10. In
right? That. Exactly. And the polls right now suggest that Mr. Lamb is running a close behind his Republican opponent, Rick Saccone, whose struggles have set off alarms in the White House and among national Republicans. An upset victory by Mr. Lamb, or even a narrow loss, would send shockwaves ahead of the midterm elections in the fall when Democrats will try to retake control of the House of Representatives. This issue with this trade war comes so – it just comes out of nowhere that it just doesn't make sense, especially if the intended purpose was to attack China. And China imports or exports the least amount of steel and aluminum here, where
really
the real
Canada.
People we were – in Canada, right? So this is one of those where you just say, what's going on here? Trump, I think, every time he's losing one of these races, it's offensive to him. I think he takes it really personal, right? Because it's sending a message against him. And right after, we're in March now. So if he loses another one, and we have a few more coming out of Texas.
Well, tomorrow is the vote in the primary in Texas, and March 13th is the primary, that primary in Pennsylvania.
We do have to take a quick break here and take care of some underwriting, but we'll get back to this in a moment. Albany County District Attorney David Soares is here. Teresa Bourgeois is here. Alan Chartok is here. And you at panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, 9:48 on a Monday morning, and it's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today, joined today by Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and David Soares. Your email address to write to us is panel at WAMC.org. When we last left the program, David Soares was connecting some dots very interestingly regarding the perhaps looming trade war over steel and a bomb thrown by the president. Go ahead, just recap that for us.
Well, the only thing I was suggesting is, you know, this issue came out of the blue last week. I mean, on top of what was probably one half dozen other incredible issues that would literally bury the White House in news and scandal. However, this was thrown out there, and you know, the intended target of course, the trade war was China, when in fact, if you look at the actual issue, the underlying issue, it doesn't impact China at all. It impacts our allies in Canada in Europe. And so, you know, the other issue that you have to take into consideration are the primaries, and as well as the other elections that are taking place. And there's a very interesting one in the 18th Congressional District, which covers Pittsburgh, the suburb of Pittsburgh, as well as West Virginia, steel country. And I believe that this, you know, threat of a trade war is designed specifically to get that base that should, you know, realistically be Donald Trump's base, because he won that district by double digits.
Yep.
During the campaign in 2016. And I believe that a loss here would be terrible for Donald Trump. And I think the White House is really worried about that. And this is a rallying cry. It demonstrates that he's looking to save this industry. It's the same thing that he did with the coal industry, talking about coal, you know, when there were elections going on, you know, in West Virginia. So to me, I wouldn't really pay much mind to it, because I don't think that this issue is going to, you know, be around.
Do you think he'll walk it back after the election?
Well, that's the interesting question is, when are they going to actually move the proposal forward, and what will the details be, and will they do a carve-out for Canada or not? I mean, it was interesting. I agree with you. I think there's a lot of politics to this having to do with that Pennsylvania race. But the other background on this is that Carl Icahn, a close friend of Trump's.
And of Red Graff's.
I don't know him personally.
Reportedly dumped $31 million in steel-related and aluminum-related stock just beforehand. So somebody is obviously...
Well, that's against the law, right? Insider trading?
You'll see if SEC... Yeah. Well, it depends
if
on
you
if...
you catch them.
Yeah.
It depends on, you know, who talked to who when, but that's an interesting side effect of this.
Now, to be fair, Trump did campaign on that, and so Icahn might say, well, I mean, he did mention this when he was campaigning.
But in terms of the timing, that's another aspect of the timing. But it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow, back to the politics in Texas, because you have early voting, by all reports, enormous increase in the number of Democrats coming out and voting, just tremendous increase, and a reduction in the number of Republicans. So you have that in Texas, and then you have this March 13th vote in Pennsylvania, which is a real barometer of what's to come, I think.
I think it'll be interesting if you start to... If there is an injection of gun rights issues this week, you know, from the White House, if there is some kind of absurd statement that's made there that elevates the issue back into the limelight.
But China apparently is not going to react strongly, but will the Europeans react strongly? Will our European allies, what will they do? And how is this going to fare in the midst of the NAFTA talks? Is it going to scramble the NAFTA talks, which we are already pretty much on the sidelines of? The U.S. is. So, he said he was going to do great deals.
If Mr. Icahn dumps his Levi stock as well as his Harley Davidson stock and Jack Daniels.
Right. So we know Trump is doing a great deal on trade. Whether he's doing great deals or not is yet to be determined. But we know he's doing a lot to scramble the situation. And will it hurt workers overall? Some letters out.
Yeah, there are plenty of letters, several of which have raised the question of Trump's alleged joke about being president for life.
Oh, you want me to just, for those who haven't heard it? Saturday night, President Trump said in a private meeting with donors, stepping back a couple of days, President Xi Jinping of China is poised to make a historic power grab, and basically Chinese legislators will make him president for life, or he could be. It'll end the constitutional two-term limit on the presidency. Saturday night, President Trump, in a private meeting with donors, said, "I think it's great. Maybe we'll want to give that a shot someday." Now, according to the New York Times, it was said in jest by a smiling President Trump. There was laughter all around. Some critics, not so sure.
Well, let me put it this way, as I may have mentioned so long ago, this morning at 7:45, Sigmund Freud was alleged to have said, "There is no joke." And what he meant by that is, you know, people can present jokes, but there's always a certain amount of truth to them. And since we know this president has taken us down, in my opinion, the road to fascism, you know, totalitarianism. Up to now, I don't have any doubt that, you know, it popped into his mind to say because it was relevant to his own personal needs. What are you looking at, Ray?
I'm looking at David Soares, who's going to speak next.
I think the reason, even if it was said in jest, I think the reason why people don't react to it as a joke is because he makes statements, you know, when he's not in front of an audience, it's supposed to be designed to make jokes. For example, his comments in praise of Duterte's, you know, execution of drug dealers. And
suggesting about how to handle the opioid crisis.
Exactly.
And not a joke.
It's not a joke. So when he's making remarks and praising other strong-arm leaders from other countries, and it sets us back somewhat, when he's in an environment where it's supposed to be accepted as a joke and people don't take it as a joke, there's a reason for that. And I think people are justified in not just laughing that off.
And you also have to consider how this is heard in other countries, and there's been some reporting on that. And it's interesting on this issue with Xi in China, they are not reporting it. There was a constitutional convention essentially, and that will be ratified this week. And they're covering a whole host of different aspects of that, but not this aspect of eliminating the limits, the term limits. But they were saying that if this does get conveyed in the public, it will be perceived as is, you know, applauding Xi for taking this action. So it's not just that whether we dismiss it in the U.S., it's how it's heard around the world. It matters.
True. Here's an interesting letter from Stephen, who says, "Hi, panel."
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, panel. Come on now. We all know the Shawshank Redemption was better than both Pulp Fiction and Forrest Gump. That's the real snub.
All right, I'll let you two fight this out.
That was a pretty good movie, all right.
That was a good movie.
And you know what? They play it all the time. So between commercials, you can get Forrest Gump all day, every day, and you can get Shawshank Redemption almost every day.
Is this guy's last name Dufresne?
No, Stephen Rogers. But seriously, love the show. Keep up the good work. Glad to see that you don't need inclusion writers to have diversity on the panel.
Oh.
Nice.
That's very nice.
Okay. And Ellen says, Trump's wink and nod at removing term limits. She says, as Alan has been saying all along, Trump's moves point towards fascism. This weekend, Trump said it's great that China's policy is president for life and that perhaps we'll have that in the USA soon.
Well, one of the issues in the midst of all of this is his, affection or lack thereof for the U.S. Constitution and deep understanding of the core aspects of the U.S. Constitution.
We amended the Constitution just so that that wouldn't happen. The whole idea
could
was
could he pass a quiz on that? Could you think
two terms and that's it? And Harry, because
Trump.
I get criticized for being so pro Harry because he did.
Because you're on a first name basis.
He did do this small thing of, you know, the atomic bomb.
A couple of A bombs.
But I've always thought he was a very good president. And by the way, historians and political scientists agree with me when they are.
All right, but what's the point?
Well, I forgot the point.
About FDR and having...
No, that's right, Raymond. Yes. You can look into my
mind. Caring about the substance of the Constitution.
Right. And Harry had an opportunity to run a third time, because remember...
Halfway through.
Not even halfway. So don't you know he had the ability, and he said, no, it's not the right thing to do.
Interesting.
Will we, throughout this Trump era, stay within the guardrails of our Constitution?
Oh my gosh, we got to take a break. We're having so much fun here. It's the Roundtable at WAMC, and we're 13 seconds overdue. Panel at WAMC.org. More panel ahead. Oh yeah. Went a little longer on the bumper music than I like to usually go, but it's Charlie Parker, Scrapple from the Apple. One of your favorites, Alan?
Absolutely. I'm right with you there, boy.
So good, so good. It's the Roundtable panel on WAMC Northeast Public Radio, 5 minutes after 10 o'clock Monday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The panel rolls on, and we have Albany County District Attorney David Soares here,
communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois, and WAMC's Bon Vivant, Alan Shartok, is here as well. You can join in the conversation by emailing us, panel@wamc.org. And I believe, Alan, we have some letters.
Well,
those are letters.
Well, I think we may have some letters.
All right.
Okay. I take offense at your commentator's ignorance of women's sizing. There are those of us who are indeed healthy, in quotes, and happen to fit in a size zero.
Yeah, no, I have to apologize for that. That's me.
No, I am not two-dimensional. I guess it's called good genetics. I eat everything I like. I love to eat, especially desserts, and never exercise. And yet there it is, discriminating against those of us whose body types happen to be preferred by the film and modeling industries is no better than discriminating against the hefty. Don't hate me because I'm thin, nor disparage me on appearance alone. And that's from
no, you
Sandy.
Completely missed the point. Well, size zero doesn't make any sense. Size zero implies nothing.
You're not there.
Size one would be theoretically the lowest.
Well, what my this is my error because I said it's not healthy, but I was more thinking about the models and others that reportedly starve themselves, and the young girls that reportedly starve themselves to try to get to what is
a very good point.
What is considered to be the ideal. And even, you know, a lot of the fashion magazines and others are beginning to change that because that's, you know, if it is your natural body weight, so be it. But it's if young girls are starving themselves because they think that's what they have to look like.
And we know that happens.
And we know it happens, and it's a problem. And I think that the modeling world is beginning to face that.
I can relate to what she's saying, though, because I'm hated because I'm beautiful, too.
Well, yeah, and me, too. And I think I'm a size 2 as well.
Terrible thing.
Yeah. what Shartok?
Michael says, steel tariffs without jobs, Wall Street Journal. According to the Wall Street Journal today, tariffs won't revive steel quoting steel manufacturers in Australia, where workers are replaced with automation. Your thoughts, Mike from Clifton Park.
And that's why this whole thing with the steel tariffs is an illusion.
You're
chasing, the white rabbit down a hole. It's right. Politics.
And you know, some people will make the argument for national security reasons that we should have at least a core steel industry. Why aren't we having a thoughtful, well thought out, well discussed policy? I mean, by all accounts, this was Wilbur Ross and his group doing an end run around the National Economic Panel, who had said, you know, let's do this deliberately, and that Trump was looking for something to announce. So, you know, the question is, why aren't we doing this in a well thought out way?
Hmm. Well, the problem too, though, is that you have President Xi, who is, hoping that artificial intelligence is going to lead his nation, you know, in the 21st century and in the centuries to come. And we have our president that is talking about clean coal and the steel industry.
Yeah, and coal jobs aren't coming back. The coal might come back a bit. And remember Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, is heavily invested in coal companies. But because of automation, it won't come back. And we really should be focusing, as China and Europe and others are, Germany, on clean energy.
Russ says, actions have consequences. A tariff on steel will make manufacturing steel-based products cheaper in countries where there is no tariff. Trump has already hinted at this problem with his threat to restrict auto imports from Europe. Though Ross says this is not smoot-hawley, it could get that way very quickly.
Right. We'll soon see.
The foolishness, the conversations that we have on a Monday morning because this man is talking about tariffs on European cars, not to mention the fact that
the
lion's share of European cars are made in places like South Carolina and in Tennessee.
Parts, at least. Yeah. Yeah. And it will be interesting to see if he actually follows through. And if he doesn't, that also sends another signal reminding people that you can't trust his word. I mean, that's already become a problem in the United States and around the world.
That's
when
true.
He says something, whether it was on DACA, remember today's March 5th, right? He promised that there would be a resolution. He created this artificial deadline of today, March 5th, for DACA resolution. He promised there'd be a resolution. He said on guns, and he walked that back.
Well, when you say walk back, Teresa, isn't he just lying? I mean, in other words, here he said, I love those children. I love those children. I want DACA, he said. Now, I think he was lying when he said that, because three times the Congress came up with proposed solutions, bipartisan solutions, and three times he kicked them out the window. So I don't know.
When it comes to the details. So rhetoric, he's all for them. But when it comes to actually the legislation, they had bipartisan legislation, as you say, Alan. And then the White House strongly advocated against key Republican senators agreeing to it.
So what was that about? It was about lying.
I just don't think the man knows anything about policy. He'll say things will come out of his mouth, but I don't think he understands the consequences of what he's saying.
Well, no. And
in a political dynamic.
He may or may not, but then his political shop with Stephen Miller and others, you know, push back on it and block actual legislation.
John says, changing the narrative. Trump's sole purpose for announcing the tariffs was to change the narrative from lack of movement on gun control and all the chaos talk about the administration. And that's from John in North Chatham.
After his dinner with the NRA.
And Lee says, go figure. At the School for Politicians, the students are taught that there are two words which they may never use. These words are yes and no. Our president, parenthesis, not a politician, does use them, but for him, they are interchangeable. And that's from Lee. And Nicholas says, Black Panther is already fifth highest grossing film, and it has passed E.T. Wonder Woman was the highest grossing film last year. White male superstars not needed. And that's from Nicholas, and he identifies himself as a white male,
but not a superstar.
No,
I'll take any white male hero except Bruce Willis. You know, I'll take anyone. Arnold, I'll take any.
I'm glad you brought up Bruce Willis. Yeah. The Death Wish is coming out. Okay, you are district attorney.
Yeah.
Does that, to some extent,
trouble you? It is so troubling. You know, the idea that the system doesn't work, and therefore
take the law
into their own hands. That's what was happening in the 70s when Charles Bronson in the original Death Wish.
1974 or 5, yeah.
That's what was happening in cities like New York, cities like Los Angeles and Chicago. And, you know, New York is the fifth safest, you know, state in the country as a result of the system actually working. So...
You think copycats will be some across the country?
I think you're always, you know, there's still people that jump off the roof believing that if they tie a blanket to the back of their neck that they can fly. So I definitely think that, you know, it's troubling.
Interesting.
To see copycats in that regard.
And when you marry it with guns, it gets particularly troublesome.
That's what's happening in Chicago, though. Chicago has the highest homicide rate for a reason, and that's because people have no faith in the system. They're taking the law into their own hands, and they're retaliating or seeking justice out on the street.
Can I say, just as an aside, how excited I was to see that some of the Parkland students went and met with some of the Chicago kids over the weekend, which is, I thought, you know, to invite them into this movement, engage them in this high school movement to try to deal with gun violence, which I think, you know, I think that component of the conversation has been missing these last few weeks, that young people, you know, having worked in Boston on urban violence issues, Baltimore Sun did this great roundtable with high school kids about the violence they face with guns. And I know Rich on Friday talked about this a little bit, but you need to widen the circle in the conversation. And I was so delighted to see that these Parkland kids went and met with these kids from Chicago,
but
Southside.
But as long as you've raised the question, you know, I have great concern that with everything that these kids are doing and how important everything that they're doing is, that it does tend to calm down. That what was imperative turns out to be, you know, another movement. But I don't see... I'm afraid.
You mean the momentum of the movement.
That's what I meant.
Well, it can't possibly keep the pace that it was, Alan, because the focus won't stay on it. But
they're counting on that.
Well, but I think that you've engaged these kids, and I think they had the right response in Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta, listen to me.
Yeah.
Florida, Tallahassee, where the votes went against them on a whole series of bills. And they said, okay, fine, we'll see you at the we'll see you on Election Day. And I think that if the, there's the march coming up, there's the walkout where I actually, you know, the walkout was at March 14th, where the kids are supposed to walk out of school. I heard an interesting thing the other day about in one school, I don't know the name of the school, but they're going to have a stay in, but stay in and learn who are your elected officials, how to reach out to them, what are the different pieces of legislation, what are the rules on both sides.
Great idea.
They're using that March 14th as kind of a teach-in rather than a walk-out. That's what the kids are organizing. I love that idea.
I have so much confidence in the young people in this movement because we have not seen Delta and major corporations step in and take a position before.
Right.
And while the NRA and, you know, your Republican base has always decided to stay in the hole and ride out the storm, I think we're seeing these instances, and unfortunately, one too many and more frequently now, that the next time you have an incident like this, you're going to just, I think it's going to explode.
Right. And there will be, there have been more incidents. There will be more, but I think you now have engaged these folks. More letters, sorry.
No, don't be sorry. Gina from West Virginia says, are you going to discuss the teacher strike in West Virginia? I cannot understand why they cannot give the teachers the 5% or even 6% raise they deserve.
So the state Senate voted a raise, and it wasn't enough. Teachers are still on strike.
Yeah.
No, that's not quite what happened.
They went back, and apparently, I think the devil was in the details because now they're starting to have a bit of remorse.
Well, they reached an agreement, but the Senate wouldn't ratify it. 19 members of the Senate would not ratify it. They reached the 5% agreement, and then that needed to be ratified, as I understand it. And the Senate, the West Virginia Senate, wouldn't ratify it. And there was some interesting story in NPR today about, you know, why do you need this? This will still keep them well below the national average. But the union rep was saying, you know, we have more than 700 non-certified teachers. We can't keep teachers. More than 50% of their schools are on the border with other states where people are paid $20,000, $30,000 more 15 minutes away. So they're just trying to get some parity so that they can get and retain teachers. And they agreed on the 5%, but the legislature wouldn't ratify it.
Do we know how many states have a situation like this where it's not a district wide contract, but an entire state is under one contract? It's the only one I know of. I'm sure there are more states that are like that.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. And then we've heard from Saul, who says, when a tariff is assessed, does that money go to the national treasury? Is it a tax?
I don't know the answer to that. You know, we need Aaron Pacetti for this one. I don't know.
Aaron, New York City. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know where the tariff goes. I should.
We'll look it up.
I assume it is, but I don't know where it goes.
We'll do our homework.
Yeah.
And Gloria says, president for life, wanted us to talk about that, and we did.
We did.
Yeah, okay. That's the problem with putting the newest letters on the top of the pile.
Right. Well, that's on you.
Yes, it is on me. All of those.
Would you like the recycle bin?
All those letters are on top of me. No, I don't need that right now.
Okay.
Joe doesn't like it that way.
Why doesn't Joe like it that way?
I don't know. He wants me to hand them the old stuff over the microphones, and then you put those in the blue can.
That's fine.
If the blue can is over here, that doesn't happen.
Don't worry, David. This happens all the time.
While you guys are arguing, I'll talk about the National Endowment for the Humanities.
I was going to take a moment and compliment Ray, because when I walked in, I said, substitute teacher, yay. But he's managed to keep the three of us really in check.
Well, you know, you've all been well behaved, and you'll get gold stars today. That's the good thing.
Some of us are tired.
Yeah.
That's wise.
Exactly. Well, President Trump is meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu today.
Oh, yeah.
And the long-awaited Mideast peace plan yet to arrive, even as Palestinians and other critics insist it'll be dead on arrival. Israel's government obviously overjoyed by President Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as the capital. Netanyahu in some hot water. We heard this morning on the BBC a third confidant has agreed to turn state's witness and testify against him. He faces corruption allegations. High stakes meeting today.
Well, I've been talking to a number of Israelis who are telling me that this is the end for Netanyahu's this is when I say the end, I mean they really got him this time, it may be, but it is interesting that here's Trump with his special prosecutor, special counsel problems. Netanyahu is in far worse shape than Trump because, you know, these are very specific things with, and we know who's going to testify negatively. So it could, in fact, upset the apple cart. And I'm sure both men are thinking about that.
Well, you know, the thing that is interesting for me is I'm going to be keeping my eye on Jared Kushner and looking for any information about Jared Kushner, discussion with Israel, and then the sudden decision to move the capital to Jerusalem. Because to me, knowing what we now know about Jared and some of his business practices, I wouldn't be shocked at all if that was done in exchange for some investment into 666 and other real estate properties for his family. So that's what I'll be looking for.
See, now I thought it was a payoff to Sheldon Adelson, one of their big donors, but who knows? It was interesting.
We know he was pleased,
right? And maybe helping to pay for the. It was interesting to me. I don't know if this has changed this morning, but as of last night, you know, typically when there's a head of state, they have a pool spray, you know, of the meeting, and then they have a press conference. And as of last night, closed to the press, no press conference, no pool spray, no publicity of this.
So this is probably Bibi's request.
Who knows? Or either
probably
of them?
Bibi's
Do you want
request.
Either of them? Given they both have their
legal troubles. But what a real change of pace and a sudden turnaround when Bibi came at the invitation of the Republicans a few years back when Obama was president, how well received he was.
Yeah.
And boy, it was such a coup for the Republicans.
Right. So, you know, you never know. He may open it up. And the other question that came up is that he apparently is going to invite the president to go for the opening of the embassy. And will he do that? Which would be quite...
And there was discussions about naming a train station in Israel after Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I saw that last week.
I don't know.
I have not seen that.
We live in interesting times, for sure.
It would be the first time his name would appear on something that he's not charging them for, right?
That we know of. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. Well, you never know. There may be some money involved. Who knows? We'll find out later.
If the 30% is tide is turning.
panel@wamc.org. I think that you cast aspersions, madam. It's awfully nice to have you
And
here.
While we can't read them all, I can say very quickly, we've probably had more mail already today on the question of how much one should weigh than anything else.
That's one of Alan's favorite topics. What do you weigh today?
No, you don't want to know.
121.
I came back having eaten and eaten and eaten.
I'm really terribly sorry if I offended anyone. I was just more thinking about the pressure on young girls to
No, it's a good perceived. Point. You
I
made
I
a very
really
good point.
Worry about that.
And we are really out of time.
No.
And it's not a Monday unless we've offended someone.
Say it isn't so.
Hey, thank you, David Soares, for being here today.
You're very welcome. And I just want to say very quickly that, you know, everybody struggles with something, and so long as you're making a conscientious effort to live healthy, that's the most important.
Yes.
That's right.
Teresa Bourgeois,
health, it's everything.
Thank you. Alan Shartok, time for Nappy. Thank you, and we appreciate it. You're listening to The Roundtable.